You are listening to Momcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. Episode, we talk about this week's books, have the awkward middle part, and in this week's spotlight, James talks about Asterix and the Goths. Around the mic tonight are...
John!
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm James.
And John's not here, that was James doing an impersonation.
I was doing a joke. Not really.
He faked us out.
You're proving you listened to last week's show.
I enjoyed it very much. It's much better than when I'm normally on it.
Yes, that much is true. Yeah. What was unexpected is how meandering we were.
That's true.
that was fun.
I can't work out whether I really meant that or whether I'm fishing for compliments.
Well, if you're fishing for compliments, you are shit out of luck. Yeah. You know who deserves a compliment? That was perfect.
I know. That was really good. I'm great about a script.
Jane is freeballing and it's working fine.
It's James's writing that blatantly screws everything.
Oh, I'm sticking in your face, you
poo head. Oh, we're just continuing last week.
Where were you last week, James? What are you doing?
I was in the West Country, businessing.
Something to do with pixies?
Something to do with business pixies.
Learning about managing flower
dust.
People.
I tell you what, I was enjoying getting some nice Cornish trawlermen in my throat.
Cornish what?
Yeah,
trawlermen?
I gobbled a lot of Cornish trawlermen that Thursday night.
Did you?
So in the morning I felt a bit woozy from downing so much Cornish trawlermen, the delicious bitter.
It's a drink.
It's a lovely, it's nice, it was lovely.
I did not realise it was a drink. I honestly thought he was really overplaying the whole homoerotica thing.
Well, he's away from the docks. He's got to make money somehow.
Do you know, I went to Plymouth. I could tell you what the trading estate near where we conducted our business looks like. Three times I've been to Plymouth now. Never really got to see it. Travelodge was horrible, though. Stayed in a Travelodge. Had grey sheets.
Grey sheets?
They should have been white.
Oh, yeah. No.
I just sort
Did
of
you
self...
get a UV light? And... Is it a UV light that they use?
It was one of those beds where you can't help thinking how many people have masturbated in this. Oh, that's one more.
I'm just going to write in my list. I'm going to add Travelodge to the list of people that's we won't be asking for sponsorship.
Yeah, we were so close as well.
What's the one that Ainsley Harriott endorses now? Is that Premier Inn?
Fuck me, it's Lenny Henry, you racist. Jesus Christ.
Who did you say, Ardlo Hanlon?
I didn't mean
Chris
Akabushi?
Andy Peters.
Jane, what have you been up to this week?
Apparently, I've become a racist. Yeah.
How did that happen?
There was something about that. I was going somewhere. Okay, Lenny Henry.
Who did she say?
Ainsley Harriott.
Yeah, that's
Ainsley Harriott isn't even a comedian.
That's Premier Inn, the far superior
chain. Premier Inn, and oh god, I forgot his name now. He was in Game On.
I need to write Premier Inn as the list of people that I'm going to try and contact.
Tim Vine.
No. The one who...
Dexter Fletcher.
No. The one out of that Salt and Pepper. Pepper.
No. Salt.
No, what?
Spinderella.
I got thrown by being accidentally racist.
Jam Master J.
I feel bad. Oh, I didn't mean MCA. It that way. I just think they both laugh a lot and that... And I get them confused.
They do. No, they do. They are very, very happy men most of the time. Lenny Henry seems a bit less happy over the last few years, but I suspect
that's... Do you mean since the breakdown of his marriage?
I'm going to write scrub through. I don't think we're going to get any sponsorship from Lenny Henry either.
Damn. We were so close.
Maybe Ainsley Harriott.
So Jane's become a racist.
Yeah.
Anything else, or was that a full week for you?
I became an 80s empowered woman fighting powerful men and horrible women to get my dream job because I'm so hardworking and good. And I don't like one of the Baldwins because he cheated on me. And James is humming the wrong thing, James.
I don't know.
I watched Working Girl. I love that film.
Oh, I've never seen it.
And it makes me want to be an empowered 80s woman.
Well, empowered 80s woman, a bit racist, yeah. Margaret Thatcher.
You know, Macaulay
Culkin.
If you want to follow her as a role model, I suggest you Google image search Meg Ryan. I think you might change your mind.
Meg Ryan wasn't in that film; it was Melanie Griffiths.
Yeah, but Meg Ryan's a good shit.
You're such a racist.
I was being sexist and wrong.
And you got them confused because they have dyed blonde hair and lots of surgery.
Oh, look the same, don't I, Jane? All at the same.
Dyed blonde, power dressing women of the 80s.
All at the same, love.
No, Meg Ryan's the one who's in a few films, and Melanie Griffiths is the one who's in, like, two films.
What was the other film?
One of which is Working Girl. Probably something where she's naked, I think. And she's married to Don Johnson.
No, she's married to Antonio Banderas, isn't she?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Who's married to Don Johnson?
I don't know, Mrs. Johnson.
I don't know who that is.
Who's in Miami Vice?
Oh, right. I only know that because I saw a picture. With Colin Farrell. They might not still be married. I remember one of the Shrek films coming out on the red carpet. And he looks all handsome and rugged and he's grown old and it looks really good. And she looked like she'd been stung by bees everywhere, all over her face. Maybe she had. That was a really horrible allergic reaction.
Antonio Banderas is a beautiful man.
He is, yes.
What else? So you watch Working Girl.
Yeah.
And you were obsessing about 9 to 5 earlier on.
Because I like to watch those films back to back, but unfortunately I couldn't.
I did think it was 9 to 5 you were talking about, that's why I was doing 9 to 5. We can edit that out.
I think 9 to 5 is actually a late 70s film.
I do like Dolly Parton.
It hasn't quite got the 80s vibe in that film, it's much more 70s.
Well, wasn't the 70s was just the staging area for the 80s, wasn't it?
Jolene is one of the saddest songs ever.
Oh, don't.
Because she's so lovely, she sounds so lovely, but she's just begging that this, like, drop-dead gorgeous woman doesn't steal her man. It's the most vulnerable song ever.
Do you remember when, is it Sid who runs the bull in the Archers, and he was seduced by Jolene? That was, Jesus Christ. I think they're a happy couple now, but that was a really tough storyline.
Do you mean the Archers, the Radio 4?
The soap opera, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Mm. Because, yeah.
I was confused for a minute. I thought I didn't know what you were talking about.
And Radio 4 kept trailing it and they played Jolene all the time.
I went away for the weekend with my wife to celebrate our anniversary. It was really nice. We went to our in-laws' house, but they weren't there and the dogs were allowed to be there with us and it was good.
There.
Nick, tell us about your week.
They let us stay in their nice house and there's lots of nice walks around there. So we went to a place called The Clumps, which sounds like it'd be rubbish, but it's really nice.
That overlooked Didcot.
It did. I sent a photo onto the internet. And I really liked the photo, but obviously it didn't look as nice as it did in my phone because nobody commented on it afterwards. And that was pretty much it.
I showed it to my wife and said, that looks nice. And I thought, there's no need to tell Nick. He's there. He knows it looks nice.
No, that's true. I did. Yeah.
He's experiencing that environment.
Yes. Mm. So that was my week. It was good. The weekend was really nice. And this week's been a bit okay and a bit weird. But we did go out to celebrate my work colleague Dommy's birthday.
Hi, Dommy.
So
that
Dommy.
Was nice. I discovered today that apparently Dommy sounds like a boy's name, so you guys might not have realised that
all
she's actually
long,
a girl.
We thought that she was a boy. I don't actually remember you referring to her in a female.
I always think names that finish with an E noise are probably more female. But then Alex could be a girl. You've met Alex, so you know he isn't a girl.
So you've not been around the world of sports, have you?
No.
Because, you know, if you... they always,
is this a shock to you?
Don't they like to put, like, an E or a, you know, like, you know, Papa...
Like Seve Ballesteros.
Tinoe.
And Tigery Woods.
Yeah, or, like, Vaughny.
Those are surnames,
Clarkie,
though. Clarkie. Those are surnames, though.
Or Jamie.
See, Jamie is kind of a man's name, but except for Jamie Lannister in Game of Thrones, it's not a very manly one.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
I think Dommy is like Jamie's and it could be boy or girl. Jamie
Lee Curtis.
It's a very... It's a very placebo name.
It is.
Yeah. Not the placebo were all androgynous.
Yeah.
I didn't like them. I saw them
placebo,
accidentally.
But I don't fancy the lead singer.
Brian Malkovich. Yeah. Yeah, I don't like
and
him.
And my brother said I was the only girl he knew that didn't fancy him.
I saw them live by accident. I didn't like it.
Doesn't your brother only know three girls and you're one of them though?
No, he knows more than three girls. I think he knows five.
Jesus.
And two of them are you and your mum. Yeah.
One of them's not really a girl, is she?
And one of them's Brian Malkovich.
Yeah, one of them's Brian Malkovich.
Should we talk about comics?
Yeah, right.
And I feel like I've blurted that out a little bit, but we talked for so long about not comics last week.
I know. Okay. Yeah. So this is completely scripted. Nick, what did you get this week?
We've dropped the ball. We all thought that we were doing this. We all thought that we were right. Everyone else was writing the script for this week. I bought a lot of comics this week. I'm not going to talk about the Marvel books I bought, with possibly one exception, because I was a little bit disappointed by all of them this week. Sorry, guys at Marvel. And they should realise, though, the people who I talk about their books all the time, the people whose books I talk about all the time, if you had a book out this week and I'm not talking about it, it means I probably didn't really enjoy it and I was a bit disappointed. And you can contact me about that online if you want afterwards, and I'll tell you privately. But you drop the ball, guys. Harder.
Try not to go too hard on Marvel, because after that $200 million opening weekend for Avengers,
I know.
That organisation's really on the ropes.
They could buy and sell me, but they wouldn't want to buy me.
200 million times, I think.
I did read John Carter, The Gods of Mars, third issue of a 5-issue series. That's a Marvel book. That was still really good, but we're in the middle of a 5-part story, so there's not a lot to say about it that I haven't already said. But Sam Humphries, Ramon Perez and Jordi Belair should... No. Yes, Jordi Belair should be very proud of themselves. It continues. Delightful.
Yay!
That's that.
Mars and John.
Glory, actually, it's because I've got some books that you guys got as well, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But the ones I really, really liked this week were Glory... from Image, that's $2.99, by Joe Keating and Ross Campbell. I really, really loved this. It's continuing the revisiting of the, I think it's Awesome Comics stuff from several years ago, that's been running for a few issues now. Ross Campbell's art on this confuses me, because there are some panels that I just really... that really boggle my mind, that I think probably would look okay on one of his black and white books, but where people's faces look a bit confusing. But in most panels, he just drives me crazy with how good he is. And I really like his bold lines, and I really like how different all of his characters look. And the monsters in this issue are just great. Between him and Joe Keating, they're really building a really nice epic story with this really rich world. Things are about to kick off properly in the next issue, but the monsters and the creatures in this made me have this really weird moment where I thought, if they didn't tend to do all ages films, the Miyazaki would be... it reminded me of the Miyazaki stuff. One of the monsters reminded me a lot of what happens to the creatures that get infected in Princess Mononoke. And another creature who is who's introduced as Henry, who's introduced as a sympathetic character, has such a sort of delightfully creepy but also really nice design.
Oh, wow.
He is creepy and cute all at the same time.
He makes me think of a Miyazaki design. But everything is about to kick off in the next issue, and it's pretty epic, and I'm really enjoying. Glory's an interesting character because she's really... kind of, I think most of the story is focusing around Riley, the girl who's ended up on this little French island, thinking she was pursuing a journalism, pursuing her journalism studies, trying to find out about Glory, and has ended up in the middle of what's about to kick off as this war between these alien races. Mm. And the second issue of Mondo...
Did you talk about the first issue?
I did, yeah. And I'm not going to say too much about this one, because the first issue I talked about a bit, and I need to go back and reread it, really. It's kind of a story that is a car crash of, like, a Hulk, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde sort of story, and a story about weird mutated chickens and a bunch of other stuff going on. To try and describe it is kind of besides the point, because it feels really surreal and tone poemy and difficult to pin down. Mm. It's a $4.99 book from Image. This is the second issue, but it's a really big-sized sort of Treasury Edition-sized book. And... it's by Ted McKeever, and most of the stuff I read by Ted McKeever that I really loved was late 80s, early 90s. It was part of the whole Epic Comics scene, and he did at least one story at Vertigo as well, early Vertigo. This kind of feels a little bit textbook Ted McKeever. It made me feel a lot of nostalgia for the early 90s, just because he's kind of, his style is, although it's developed and is a bit more detailed than it used to be, it's quite sort of, it's super stylized and really unusual and instantly recognizable to me. It's mental. I wouldn't try and read this issue without reading the first one, but I try and get hold of the first one if you like weird stuff that you don't necessarily understand what's going on. It's beautiful as well. I just love it. Like, black and white comic. I love the art. There's a few pages of advert at the back, but it's like a nice substantial feeling thing. It is weird. You're not going to really understand what's going on half the time, but you should just like roll with it, mm-hmm. is what I reckon.
That's lovely, man.
And one thing I want to mention briefly, I might try and write a proper review of this, but one book I read this week that only just came out, I think. Only came out a few weeks ago.
I thought it had come out a little while ago, but I think we were talking about it and it hadn't come out yet, and you were really excited about it because you had Psychedelic Tales, didn't you?
Psychiatric Tales. Yeah. Some of it was quite psychedelic.
Don't beat yourself up about it.
I use my brain up on other things.
It's fine.
Other than something I have.
It actually probably has been out for a little while.
I think we were talking about it at Thought Bubble, because you spoke to Daryl there, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Daryl Cunningham, who we spoke to at Thought Bubble. He did a book about being a psychiatric nurse. Mm-hmm. Well, not just about being a psychiatric nurse, but it was about psychiatric stuffs.
Yeah.
And he's done a book. This book's about science, and it's called Science Tales. That's kind of a little bit misleading, because what it's actually about is specifically hoaxes and urban myths within science. And he covers a real variety of things. There's a focus on medical. There's a kind of a focus on medical myths. There's stuff about electroconvulsive therapy, homeopathy, the MMR, the vaccine thing, Dr. Andrew Wakefield. But there's also stuff about climate change, the hoax, the supposed hoax landing on the moon. And he kind of goes somewhere, he talks about the stuff. He talks about each case and gives a little bit of information about each one. I really liked it. It's good value for money because it's a pretty thick and dense book. There's lots of information in it, and there's lots of like there's a list of sources in the back, so you can go and read up more about them. And it isn't an expensive book. It's $11.99 RRP, but you can probably get it cheaper from. You can probably get it cheaper than that online. But in some ways, it was a little bit lacking for me because, on the one hand, the stories that you already knew about, the ones that you already had a little bit of knowledge about, because of the nature of the book, he could go into them in a little bit of depth. But I think it was mainly for people who really didn't know anything about them. Mm-hmm. I'm by no means an expert on any of these, but The ones I already knew a little bit about, he couldn't really go into loads of depth about them. There's also something he does in Psychiatric Tales, which is his style is very prone to delivering lots of information in the captions with only little bits where it's more traditional comics, yeah, where characters are talking to each other and stuff like that. And in Psychiatric Tales, that worked really, really well because quite often he'd be talking about a case. So having pictures of the particular patient he was talking about reacting in the way that he was describing or stuff like that, it made kind of more sense. But in this, because he's talking more about general subjects, sometimes you're looking at the picture and it's obviously designed to provoke a feeling rather than be explicitly about something, and it sometimes doesn't work just because the focus of the book isn't as clear as in Psychiatric Tales. But it's definitely worth picking up, especially for I think it's definitely, as I said, I'm not particularly informed about this stuff, but it's quite educational, but the books about the science comics I've read before that have been about a specific subject have obviously been able to go into more depth, but it gives you quite a broad sense of several of these hoaxes and about how credulous people are sometimes. And if you are someone who isn't already thinking about that far too much already, this would probably be quite a nice little thing to have on your shelf. I'm certainly glad I've got it, but I did prefer Psychiatric Tales. This looks really pretty though, because it's in full colour as well, which is nice. And I love his style. I love his art, and he uses photos to good effect in this as well. So it's pretty cool. I like it. I'm glad I've got it.
Cute.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it for the comics that I got this week, I think.
James.
Hi.
I realise you should have probably gone first, but I think, Nick will probably talk,
It's James! All good.
Hi.
Hi.
I brought awesome this week. First up is a book I know you've read, Nick. I'm not sure about you, James.
I have not read this, James.
This is a book by Jonathan Hickman. It's from Image.
He's your favourite.
Yeah,
you love him.
$3.50, and it's the Manhattan Project's The Bomb. And
do you think that Jonathan Hickman is the bomb?
I think he is the bomb. I think he's fucking awesome.
Do you think that if you love Jonathan Hickman so much, you should maybe marry him?
Can I be your bridesmaid?
I'm already married.
That's okay.
And I think he might be too.
In the future, it's all cool.
We could just have an affair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Go to your wedding.
Okay.
I'm trying to read who the colourist is because I thought I recognised the name.
Geordie Belair.
Wasn't that someone on one of my books? Anyway, carry on.
So it's the continuation of his alternate reality tale about the Manhattan Projects. And specifically in this episode, we look at how the Enola Gay came to dispatch its payload.
Enola Gay.
Enola Gay, what did I say?
I think you said Alona Gay.
Yeah, Alona Gay.
A lone gunman who happened to be gay.
A lone gay. We also get...
saying Alone AK.
Enola Gay is in the song.
Yeah.
That's a coincidence. Hang on, that song isn't about the plane, is it?
No, probably not. It's probably about a girl with a similar name.
You're not joining in, James. It's no fun when you don't.
No, because I've got a train of thought.
Oh, sorry, dude.
I'm trying it not to go off the sunken trucking.
It's quite good when John's here, isn't it?
Oh, you fucking bastards. Oh, so mean.
He was just making a statement.
And you were so nasty to me on last week's podcast. It's not James's fault. Oh, he's got cat heads in his legs. Oh, he's such an asshole. Oh, I much prefer John. I love you so much with your lovely shiny head and your little face. Fucking arseholes.
Oh, I've missed you so much.
So we get a little bit of high politics, and we also get some detailed character pieces as well. The art of fuck the pair of you. The art is beautiful. It's still very reminiscent of Who's it reminiscent of? You know, X-Men, Morrison, We Three, Help Me Out, Quietly.
Quietly, sometimes, yeah, I can see
I
that.
I think very reminiscent of Frank Quietly. It makes me very happy in my belly. We find out all about the nuclear bomb, how it came to be, some very strange things being done to a dead president, and a brand new one being manipulated too. It's a weird, strange world that Hitman's created that ain't so different from our own, you know?
It ain't so different. No, you're right.
Beautiful colour palette, beautiful art, and
great design.
Great design, and Jonathan Hickman can write the fuck out of a comic, can't he?
I like that issue a lot more than because the second one was okay, but I kind of it left me after the first one. It left me kind of a little bit nonplussed. Mm. This one's awesome.
It's cranked the dial up to at least 10.5, if not 11.
I love how he writes Einstein.
Correct.
I just like it. It's good.
All of the characters are very. Yeah, I like them all. I like all of his characters a great deal. I like the Green Skull, weird gas man.
Who is he?
Fuck knows.
I only really know two people. Maybe I'd be getting even more out of it if I really knew that much about the
Richard
history.
Richard Stilgo.
I think it might be Richard Stilgo
because he was part of those. Yeah.
Hang on, or Michael Rosen.
Could be Michael Rosen, yeah, because he was talking about Middle English.
Yeah. Good comic, though, good, great comic. Good well comic. Done. Well done, Jonathan Hickman and Nick Pitara and the other guys.
Another good comic, also at the $3.50 price point, is Conan the Barbarian by Brian Wood, James Harron, not Becky Cleanan this week,
no.
And Dave Stewart. Part one of the Argos Deception, in which Bellet and Conan come up with a cunning plan to sail to Argos and relieve them of their cash.
the best way to get anything out of Argos is to go in mob-handed and pirate it, because otherwise you've got to wait for them to get it from upstairs.
And you give them a number, and then you just become a number to them, and then they stamp you, and then you leave.
You laugh, but this story... The main plot point is Conan can't find one of those little pens.
Hmm.
Oh, don't they have pencils now?
Conan can't find one of them little pencils. Mm. And so he can't...
Do they actually have pencils now? Is it all just touch screen, I think?
No, I think you still write stuff onto a little... I think you still write
you
stuff
can
onto
do, but they've gone a bit more touch screeny. So you don't get annoyed at a piece of paper and a book, you get annoyed at a screen.
I wonder if either Greeks or Americans, because Argos always sounds like a Greek thing as well.
Even
have Argos, in which case there's just no humour in the name to being used to them at all.
They do, but they call it Brentwood.
All right,
because that's an exotic sounding English place.
All right.
So, we should go and buy our poorly put together self assembly furniture from Brentwood.
Yes, I don't really understand. I was just thinking, to my fellow Greeks out there, please stop electing Nazis. That'd be good.
Aren't they trying to elect communists? That's the opposite.
Well, they elected the people who have the practically swastika things, who want all foreigners out.
Oh, shit.
That isn't Greek Cypriots, though, so actually it's my people are okay. So, yeah, go on.
So, yeah, Conan and Queen... Bellet hatch a plan to sail to the port of Mesentia, Argos, where we saw Conan escaping from in the very first issue.
Oh, yeah, when.
They're going to relieve them of all their gold. But it's a lovely story about sort of part of the story sees Conan separated from his queen, who he has fallen so in love with, and it sort of like has themes of trust and lust.
Ooh.
It's lovely. It's a really nice character piece with sort of lots of inner monologue with Conan concerned whether a deal will be reneged on and so forth. And it's lovely, quite a touching love story, I thought. The art is beautiful, especially there's a lovely double-page splash of them arriving in the port. It's just phenomenally gorgeous, really detailed, lovely, rich, textured page.
Are we still on? Because I saw Brian were talking on Twitter about how he was a bit nervous about going off the adapted stuff and onto the original stuff, because the first few issues were definitely adapted from a Robert E. Howard book. I don't know if this is, if he was talking about issues that were being solicited or if he was talking about this. This is a new story arc, isn't it? The Argos Deception. A Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan comic, or any Becky Cloonan comic is always a treat.
Yeah. Mm.
And I really liked James Herron's artwork in this.
I did very much.
But I like it, it wasn't exactly the same feeling as opening a comic with Becky Cloonan art, but him and Dave Stewart do a really good job on this.
Mm.
But I felt like the story was better in this. I've really enjoyed the first three issues, but this is, it feels like stuff's, it felt like the first three issues were set up.
Mm.
And
I know what you mean, yeah.
Now that he's with Bellett and they're partners in crime, it feels like this is where stuff starts happening, and I really liked that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, it's really good.
Felt like more happened in this issue than happened in the previous three. It's beautiful. Yeah. I
feel really dialed into the characters at this point. I'm really, you know, I know Conan from the movies, but I've never read a Conan book.
No.
I love it. It's really good.
I think I read some of the old Marvel comics, but yeah, this is kind of, this is great. I'm loving it. I'm glad you like that.
The final book I'm going to talk about is another Jonathan Hickman book with art by John Romita Jr. At $3.99. It's round four of A versus X. Ding, ding!
Well, because you haven't really been enjoying this series that much, so I guess you probably didn't like this very much, did you?
James, who's writing this one?
Jonathan Hickman. Yeah, it's awesome. It's really good.
You really liked it, didn't
you? I really like it. It's a lovely mix of action. The story's getting deeper. Wolverine shows his hand, the plot's thickening. As with I do with most events, at the end of Act 2, all of a sudden I go, oh, I really like this now.
Because that's when the Stockholm Syndrome really kicks in, isn't it?
And it's entirely consistent with how I've enjoyed every other book I've read. Romita Jr.'s art seems to have taken a turn for the better.
I don't know if it's the same inker. Can you have a look at the credits?
I meant to check and I couldn't remember. I'm sure Scott Hanna's been inking it the whole way through.
I don't know, but and Laura Martin's a brilliant colourist, is probably bringing a lot to it. Yeah. But and I love John Romita Jr., but there are panels in that just don't even look like him, and they're the nicest panels, so I don't really know what's going on there, but it's a beautiful looking
book. There's some stuff early on where Wolverine meets another character, and it's really gorgeous. He's wearing a dead polar bear for warmth.
That's entirely what lovely. You do.
But it's very cool. The cosmic stuff works really nicely. The Jeopardy works really nicely. The interaction of characters with Hope is lovely. I actually give a shit about her, even though I didn't know her before, and I certainly didn't at the beginning of the book. Yeah, but all of a sudden I feel dialed into this story and I'm enjoying it. So you're right, maybe it is the Stockholm Syndrome.
No, I think it looks prettier than the first two issues a lot as well.
It could be that the Avengers don't appear in this very much, and I actually find myself really not enjoying the parts where the Avengers appear, and I'm not sure why, because I don't dislike the Avengers. But
I feel like this is an X-Men event that they've kind of interloping on.
But I think much of the book is just about two characters in particular. The interaction between them is very nice, and then some of the out of this world action that features Thor is very enjoyable. But I don't know, Steve Rogers comes across as more of an arsehole than I've ever really considered him to be in this.
How much of an arsehole does Scott Summers come across as?
Less than Steve Rogers, which is
not how things are in the Marvel Universe. So.
Yeah, I don't know what it's just it. One, I can't remember the name of that X-Man.
Thunderbird, I think.
Thunderbird. He's just given Thunderbird a shoe, and he says, "Stay down, son. No need for this to be worse than it already is." And it's just like, oh, fucking you arrogant twat.
Well, but that's right. He doesn't want to have to beat them to
but
death.
No, he's sort of, but he comes across as an arrogant twat.
How does the AR work in this one? I noticed that the panel you were talking about there had some. Was there like an alternative scene where he was less of an arrogant twat?
Who knows? I couldn't be asked, to be honest with you. AR has not really worked for me very well so far, so I couldn't be bothered in this one. We could try it now if you like.
No, it's okay. Okay. I don't like Colossus in that helmet, in Juggernaut's helmet. It looks stupid.
Is that Colossus in Juggernaut's helmet?
That came out of the Siege. No.
No one looks good in Juggernaut's helmet. Juggernaut's helmet's fucking stupid. It makes everyone who wears it look like a penis.
But Juggernaut's at least totally disproportionate, so it makes more sense. Anyways.
You enjoying reading that? Is it...
Yes, it's lovely.
It's all right. Yeah, I'm enjoying it now. I dig it. It's the same as always with events. End of the second act, beginning of the third, and all of a sudden I'm well into it. So.
Well in.
Yeah, it's called Knit. So, Jane, tell us about your comics.
In it, though, like...
My comics. This week I picked up Saucer Country.
Good work.
I always want to call it Saucer County, because that's what I think it should be. But counties don't exist. Oh, they do exist in America,
they do exist in America.
But not like they do here.
Oh, God. That's what I want to call it.
I wonder if the mic will have picked that up, James.
I want to call it tummy growl. That's what I want to call it.
Are you a bit hungry?
I'm starving.
That's my goodness.
That was something trying to fight its way out. Saucer Country by Paul Cornell and Ryan Kelly at $2.99.
Good price point.
Vertigo. Really, really, really enjoying this story. It's got the weirdness. It's got the really surreal bunny rabbits, and it's got spoiler, by the way. Well, not really much of a spoiler.
Well, there's a bunny rabbit.
Yeah,
in
it's in the first. It's literally on the first page. So
it's on the cover.
It is on the cover,
but it's the front page as well.
It's on the first proper page of comics in there.
Yeah.
And it's got the serious political element of it, and.
Just won this week, then.
Just won, and quite low down. And it's got the misunderstanding between the governor and her ex-husband, and they still think that he's, well, there's a bit of a pursuit. She hasn't explained to her sort of entourage what's happened, and some people are trying to pursue him because they think that he's hurt her, and that's not quite right. You're learning a bit more about, you know, they're fully admitting the whole alien thing, but they've brought in a expert, the expert who also talks to two imaginary little people, who
leprechauns
keep, no, they're human beings, but they're about 4 inches tall, and he can only see them.
Okay.
And they really pop up in the really odd places. And so we're not sure if he's batshit insane or if he's got some sort of insight into the future or what's happening, but they've called him in. He was fired from Harvard, or he left Harvard. He's been called in to help the governor with a very sensitive matter, which is the fact that she thinks she's been abducted by aliens, but he is saying, well, look, you know, there's no... everyone has their accounts, but there's no sort of evidence that this has happened. It's a mythology. We need to build on what happened to you to find out what kind of mythology it follows, which is... It was just a really good... It's just a really great take on alien abductions and what's coming up next, but it's so mental. And I love Ryan Kelly's artwork, and it's consistently brilliant through this issue.
Good. I'm glad you're thinking that.
He's... only he can see the little people.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. You said he can only see them, and I had a moment where I thought that must make it difficult.
He's the only person who can see them, but he can see other things.
No, that's cool. He's not literally...
They might see for him. No, that's not true. He's the only person who can see them, and as far as the comic leads you to believe, he can see everything else around him.
Seeing awesome. Little people for the blind.
Yeah. No, that's what I was wondering.
I love Saucer Country, but I have saved the best to last that came out this week, which is the first thing I read, and absolutely loved it, and I will spoiler it with one line in it, so
Is it the thing that says on the last page?
No.
Good, okay.
No. Oh.
So if you're reading Saga and you want to be completely spoiler-free, tune out now.
No, I'll tell you... No, listen, listener, because I need to tell you how amazing this comic is, but I will pre-warn you when I'm just about to say something so you can skip possibly 30 seconds to a minute. Yes, it's Saga on Image Comics by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples at $2.99. Absolute freaking bargain. You get so much for your money on this book.
Can I just say, there was a book from Image this week by Nathan Edmondson and...
Was that The Ride?
No, it wasn't. It was booked by Nathan Edmondson and Neil Klein, I think, or Nick Klein. And I didn't pick it up because it was $3.99 and it was next to that. And it was, I think it felt thinner than that, or at least the same size. And I was like, there's probably a reason why this is $3.99, but I just can't. Not when Saga's, you've got a limited amount of money.
Yeah.
And I wanted to try the new thing, but I couldn't justify it in that case. So it's worth mentioning because you mentioned the price point on Saga. They are knocking out an amazing comic.
Yes. And it's relatively affordable. So we're obviously following Hazel and Marco, who have. Oh, sorry, not Hazel. Hazel's the daughter of Roy Marco. I can't remember her name. The wife's name. It's completely gone. Name. Sorry. It's not.
Because it's just her talking to someone else, so nobody's referring to her by name in this issue.
I can't remember, but Hazel's their newborn daughter.
Bob.
Trapped in the... I don't think that's going to work every time. They're trapped in the forest of horrors, and they've come across these ghosts of children that have been... They've died in a horrific way, and their body has stayed in that way. And you learn that the children were caught up in the war, and they're there to protect their land. Even though all their people and all their villages have been completely wiped out, they're out of a sense of duty to their parents. They're protecting this land, and you learn a bit more about them. Marco's been hurt, so his wife is desperately trying to save him, and there is a way she can save him, and that's with a spell. But you need an ingredient that wasn't anywhere to be seen. So one of the ghost girls has a proposal for her. So I'm going to leave it there. That's not spoiling too much. It's annoying that I can't remember her name. Oh. Obviously, they are fugitives, and there are assassins on the steady on their heels trying to capture them. One of them that we met in the last issue is a weird... half spider, half human woman who's actually quite sassy and funny, and
she's kind of hot too.
It turns out the assassins all sort of, you know, this isn't funny, as imagine there's a network, and she knows one of them particularly well, and she gives them a call, and the phone call doesn't, you know, the phone call happens, and there is a slight disagreement in it, and her closing line on the phone to him, spoiler alert.
Well, it's a modern spoiler, isn't it? It's one throwaway line. It's not a plot point, is it?
No. I hope Lioncat takes a massive shit on your stupid cape tonight. Oh. I thought that was the funniest.
I hope Lioncat. I think we've met that guy before.
We have met him before, and the Lioncat, because he says lying, in and the it's first really issue. Funny.
Liar!
Yeah, and it's funny because his owner says something out loud to himself, and the cat goes lying. So,
her name's Alana.
Alana, yes.
I just checked. Thank you. I wasn't remembering it.
Alana, it focuses mainly on her in this issue.
It's a great comic. I really like it. I really like that comic as well. It is funny. It's funny for an action comic.
Fiona Staples' artwork is just breathtaking. It's lickable. Gorgeous. It's so nice. You could eat it.
Yeah, you could definitely lick it, but you'd have to buy a second copy.
Exactly.
So but it's quite affordable, though, so you could. I think. Okay. Thank you, Jane. That was awesome. Awkward middle bit. That was a brilliant segue into the awkward middle bit. We're in the awkward middle bit.
We're in now.
Yeah.
Feels good. Once you're in, it's fine, isn't it? It's just you're a bit apprehensive before you, but now it feels great.
Phil is great. I love that dude.
Yeah, totally.
Who's Phil?
Can I go first? And you got stuff you want to talk about?
I do have a couple of things to talk about. Yeah, do you want to talk about your thing first?
Yes, can I go first?
Yeah, go on.
We spoke about our friend who's got a website where he is reviewing one graphic novel a day for a year. The site is called 365 Graphic Novels. He's already reviewed three books that I gave him ideas for, but we were talking to him and he'd really like you, listener, to give him some ideas. Do you have an idea, Jane?
I have
Jane?
Ideas. He did ask me, and I've been awful, and I haven't given him ideas. But the thing is, I haven't caught up on what he's reviewed recently, so I'm really worried I'm going to give him the wrong ideas. But I'll say them anyway, and then I'll read them later.
You give a lot of young men the wrong ideas, Jane.
Day Tripper and Why the Last Man. which will be a big read for him.
I'm gonna, which volume?
He could do each volume, and that could be a review.
Yeah, you could do each volume.
Because each one's a story or two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Jane's suggestion.
That's not two suggestions, that's like nine suggestions.
I know, I didn't think about the whole, there's ten. Because Why the Last Man's amazing.
And yeah, it's a couple of weeks you have to read it.
Well, yeah, sorry. Well, there you go.
Why are you apologising?
I don't know. I feel like I just apologise for my existence in advance.
So listener, either go on to 365graphicnovels.com and you can leave suggestions there, or let us know and we will pass them on.
Yeah.
But do
Although
it.
We do things really slowly around here, so you might want to get in touch with him directly.
Go and check out his site, though. I think it's a really cool idea and I like his reviews. They are nicely written.
Two new releases this week, indie release, like small press releases. One of them is a reprint of a collected reprint book of Dead Queen Detectives by Bevis Musson. I'll post the links for both of these. Well, I'll post all of the links in the show notes. But Dead Queen Detectives is lots of fun. They are, I can't remember which queens they are because my history is rubbish.
Queen Bess is one of them. I'm sure
they're well funny, and Bevis knows who they are, and that's what's important. But it's about three dead English queens,
yeah.
who live in a house, and sometimes they're detectives. Most of the time, they just hang out in the house and have like very short one-page exchanges that are quite funny. That's going to be.
I think it's cute. I love Dead Queen Detectives. It's cute as hell. It's really nice.
Within the UK, I believe it's £6, including postage. So, and like I said, I'll post the link. And also, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I talked about Whale House Number 1 by Andrew Cheverton and Chris Doherty. It's a lovely British, like, rural mystery, family mystery type thing, which is really, really good. Really mysterious and interesting. And they launched it properly at Bristol, I believe. I think Dead Queen Detectives was there as well.
That was this weekend just gone, wasn't it?
Yeah, we didn't make it to, none of us.
No, none of us.
But that's available online as well. I believe that the digital version of it is available from Chris's site and the physical version of it is available from Andrew's site, but I'll post the links. The digital copy, certainly at the moment, is only £1 for the first issue, it's well worth it.
Holy moly!
Pardon, James?
Holy moly!
It's well worth it. It's good for £1. That's good. Priced for affordability.
Mm.
And we asked a question.
I
asked a question because people were a little bit. I've seen a couple of more positive reviews of Bristol now, but certainly on Monday and Tuesday, people who'd been there a few times seemed quite disappointed by the whole thing. And so I just kind of asked. I decided to ask. What people's priorities are when it comes to conventions, when they're choosing which ones to go to. I didn't word it very well, to be honest. When choosing which ones to go to, why? What do people choose?
Oh, okay. I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So and it wasn't. I mean, I did kind of clarify that afterwards, but it's cool. Because one of the issues with Bristol seemed to be there were issues with signage. And people getting there, people were like having to travel to get there, and then the further you have to travel, the more expensive it is for you to find somewhere to stay, and then you've got any little things. We found this with Thought Bubble last year a little bit as well. I think the first day we were at Thought Bubble, because the journey up was such a nightmare that it had to be that much better for us to actually like get into it. So we asked people basically, and a few people answered in our various different places. Let me find my phone. Okay, David Made of Wynn, said, and I'm paraphrasing because he said it on Tumblr, but he said, and this is what's interesting because obviously different people are in different positions and they're going to have different priorities. Where he's a drawfer who has wares to sell, he said, and he felt guilty about it, which was quite funny, that he basically has to consider how many comics he's likely to sell there.
Ah,
well, so for him, that's a priority.
Yeah. have as priority.
That definitely makes sense, I think. Peter Hammerson, who is our one of our more recent listeners, who we hear from a lot, which is nice. I love it.
Hi, Peter.
But he said, and I think he's a bit like John in this regard, he said, "I don't know, as I haven't really been to one." Which seems like a really... It makes me sad, because I really like comic conventions.
Come to Thought Bubble.
Has John been to... He hasn't been to one at all, has he?
But John and I used to attend something you're going to speak about in a moment. Oh. He has gone to.
He used to go to a lot of comic marts in London back in the day. Mm. The day capitalised. Mm. But a proper con, never managed it. He's no idea what he would do. This is exactly what I do at comic cons, which is brilliant. Not this bit. I have no idea what I would do. I expect I'd do a lot of shopping for cheap back issues. That's from having been to comic marts, I think.
Because that doesn't tend to be the case, I find, at comic conventions. No. There's not a lot of bargains generally to be had.
Because we do the next bit. Mm. Jane doesn't, and Steve don't, but we do the next bit.
That's because they're handsome and confident.
Act awkward around one or two creators I respect and try to avoid getting sick. Mm. I don't tend to avoid getting sick. But I am very good at being awkward around one or two creators I respect. The more I respect them, the more awkward I get. So if I find it really easy to be around you at a comic convention, it probably means I don't really think much of you.
I get quite over-friendly. Maybe some people like...
You shouldn't just touch people like the way you do.
It hasn't got me in trouble yet.
No. Which reminds me, I haven't seen Lee Gallagher on Twitter for a little bit. I'm a little bit worried about
him. He was talking about accidentally walking in on a man pooing on the train.
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, and apparently he saw balls as well.
All right, so he's become scatologically obsessed, and that's why he's not on Twitter. I think it might
have damaged him a little bit, seeing another man's balls while he's pooping on the toilet.
I have to say to Peter, though, about this. He says, if Twitter is to be believed, that seems to happen a lot, meaning getting sick. People do talk about con crud. There is a possibility that you will get illnesses when you are around an awful lot of people, especially people whose hygiene isn't always great, because there is a massive turnover of people going through places, and if they've looked forward to an event, they're going to go whether they're feeling ill or not. But I think a lot of the time, basically, con crud is caused not by catching a bug, but by really not looking after yourself for the weekend. By not, like, by staying up much later than you normally would, getting up earlier than you would, maybe eating too much hotel breakfast.
Om nom!
And generally drinking too much. And then there's the anxiety, if you're like us. Well, me, certainly. There's a little bit of anxiety until you get talking to people, and you're trying to make sure you catch all the people you know there. And so that causes... So all of those things, I think, combine more than actual disease to make people feel a little bit ropey by the final day. And then you have to go back to work on Monday, and of course you're going to feel shit.
I think it's depression that causes con crud more than anything.
Post-con depression? Mm. Or just general depression?
I do get post-con blues.
Pete Clack, who is a drawfer, but he says, to be honest, it's a mixture of many things on the list, because we gave them a list. Price and geography are important to me due to lack of income. I'm not that worried about hotels, as I usually can't afford that, so I guess he just sleeps on the streets, maybe. I don't know. Venue and organisation is important, as it can get claustrophobic. Well, that's true. And socialising is also quite important. That was my impersonation of you, James. Socialising is also quite important. Now, I think, I haven't got what Bevis said in front of me, but I think Bevis Musson said that the main thing is socialising. Really sorry if I'm wrong about that, Bevis, but we did just plug your book, so, you know. C'est la vie.
Deal with it.
But I think, and we both, certainly the very few amount of people who voted on the site, so it's by no means scientific, but socialising came up on that. If I know that people I like to hang out in a pub with are going to be around, I'm more likely to really want to go to a place.
Yeah. Me too.
I was torn, because it's obviously... Seriously, James.
James, that's too far, awful. Even for me.
Because I like the social aspect of it. I love the social aspect of it. I met so many lovely people in a non-patronising way. They're just great people. But also, who's going to be there? Which creators do I like?
Which creators?
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, we're lucky in a sense that we know quite a few small press guys and we socialise with them, and also they are there and we are looking forward to seeing them there. So that combines both. But we'll see maybe creators that we wouldn't usually get that kind of access to. So
I have
to admit... off mic, she said to me, what I look for in a con is Lee Gallagher going to be there, and how many free donuts can I gank off him? So...
who's going to let me lick them on the face?
You've changed your tune.
Everyone needs a good licking on the face.
There's something about female comic book podcasters in this country, and face licking, I think, is going
on
there.
I like it.
I mean, I really liked the fact that Bill Sienkiewicz was at the convention that Jane and I went to. I will be honest, though, although a decent guest list does kind of get me excited to begin with, I just have to accept at some point in the process that I'm not going to have the nerve to go up to most of the people I really want to talk to and talk to them. So it's kind of, I can't even go up to the creators that I've known for years and talk to them.
It's nice to get excited about it, knowing that people you really like their work and they're going to be there. I mean, if you get to a convention and all your friends are there, that's great, but if you're going around and it's like there's not anything you really know, I mean, you might discover some new things, but if there are people there that you are not particularly interested in, then it's kind of going to like, you know, perhaps Kapow isn't for us, because there are going to be creators there that perhaps we're not as interested in.
There's going to be an awful lot of stand-up.
Various other reasons.
There's going to be an awful lot of stand-up comedians
but
there.
But it's not, you know, even if we know people that are going, and it would be, I'm sure it would be a great sort of social event for us, but it's also the lineup that kind of puts us off. So I think, I don't know, that's just for me.
I like the folksy vibe of a thought bubble.
I love thought bubble. I think everyone likes thought bubble.
I like the disco, but you guys don't.
We do. If it's not overcrowded, they've got beer, and it doesn't smell funny, and the security guards aren't being proper bastards to people.
Once all the amateurs decide to go back to their hotel and create hashtags, it becomes a lot less crowded, let me tell you. And then it's good for all of us dancers who like our boogie, who get our boogie on.
I hate dancing, and I hate to be made to feel like I'm a poo-pooer, because I just feel I'm too self-conscious to dance. I'm a big, fat, wobbly man, you know?
And that's fine, because... James didn't dance, but it just seemed much better. There was better music, and
because James was there,
and we were able to talk and sit down, and not everyone was sort of crammed together. And they had flowing alcohol. That's a big part.
I tell you what, once the amateurs who want to go back to the hotels and create hashtags go, it gets a lot easier to get served at the bar as well. No, but actually, my experience of it was very different, because I found a steady stream of really cheap, if a little bit disgusting alcohol. Well, free, if a little bit disgusting alcohol at one end of the room, so it was kind of different.
Oh, that, yeah, that wasn't great. But
it was fine. It wasn't very tasty, but it made me feel nice. I was talking to Stace Bob, though, I think, as well, which was lovely. The one thing that bothered me a little bit about the dance floor was there were some really, really cool people on the dance floor who were doing proper dancing where they could lead the lady. And I don't know, I was talking to some people last night about my experience at the burlesque night I went to. Did I tell you about having to audience participated into blowing out the burlesque dance?
On the podcast.
Did I tell you later on that one of our friends wanted to dance and I was the only boy in the group? So she's a little bit taller than me. She's lovely, but she's a little bit taller than me. And she wanted to dance in 50s style, which was what everyone was doing. And I was like, well, she grabbed me. So I was dancing. And I said, I don't really know what I'm doing. And she said, well, that's fine, just because I do. And she led me.
That's okay.
So it was a nice time. But it is the most emasculating. First, a lady in hardly any clothes asked me to do something, and I failed to. Which isn't the first time that's happened, I can tell you.
It's happened to me too.
And then I got led around the dance floor by a girl. Now, okay, I was going to say the 1990s.
It's the 90s. It's the 90s.
I'm a new man.
It's not even the noughties anymore. It's the 21st century.
We're in the tweens.
And a lot of things have changed in the way gender equality works. But still, I think it is a little bit emasculating to dance with a girl and have them lead you around the dance floor. I tried to be progressive.
Oh, I was going to say, wouldn't that mean that takes the pressure off you? You're like, oh, she can lead me. I don't have to worry about this.
No. It's one of the few things like chopping wood where you're still supposed to be able to lead them. And she was bigger than me as well, which made it very difficult for me.
Oh. My daughter's almost bigger than you. She's not two yet.
And also, Amy and I have a bit of a couple crush on her, so it was a little bit weird.
Right. Now we've
but she won't be listening to this, so it's fine.
Nick's anxiety.
We ask a question every week. We won't be asking
you
a question.
You turned me off for doing that, by the way.
You've done it quite a lot.
Yeah,
since
I know.
Sitting there. I think perhaps it's just the
height. James keeps scratching himself, I've noticed.
I quite like that. Nick just scratched my leg. That is quite nice. Oh, jeez, bit of blood where a little bit of blood shouldn't have been.
But we ask a question every week. We always like having you get in touch with us anyway. But we ask a question every week, and you should always listen to us on Twitter, where we will ask these questions. Where are we on Twitter, Jane?
We are at JMom.
James Mom.
Nick's site. And Momb Comics.
Mm-hmm. And John Momb.
And John Momb.
But he doesn't listen to the podcast, so he won't ask you a question.
So just tweet random stuff at him.
Yeah. And also you can follow the when we do talk about the show, normally we put hashtag Mombcast as well. But you can also email us.
At momcast@gmail.com.
And we are on, we've got a page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Momb Comics, I think, but I'll post that on the site and also on Tumblr, where we put pictures, but we also sometimes ask questions, and also on Google+. So I'll post all those links. They're easy enough to find from the site. But yeah, get in touch with us, because we know you're out there listening, listener. But it's nice to hear from you. We like getting mail.
The site is momcomics.com.
The site is momcomics.com. Thank you, Jane. I think that's it for the awkward middle bit.
I want to hear about goths.
I think we did really well. Yeah, this week we're going to talk all about goths.
Goths.
Asterix the Goth.
That doesn't sound right. No, it's Asterix the Goth.
Asterix the Ghoul.
Obelix buys Asterix the Sisters of Mercy CD.
Is that how? What makes you a goth?
It's almost made me a goth.
Was there a tribute band called the Sisters of Mercy? Or am I just imagining that?
I really hope there was.
That Sisters of Mercy, named, I believe, after a Leonard Cohen song, but
probably.
I'm not sure.
I'm going to talk about Asterix and the Goths, which is the third volume in the Asterix series.
Visigoths, possibly.
And Ostrogoths.
Excellent.
We'll talk about that as we go through the story. Originally published in 1963 in its complete form, it was serialised in Pilote magazine between 61 and 62 in France. First released or published in the UK in the year I was born, 1975, and translated by Anthea Bell and Derek Hockridge. Always worth mentioning those two, because they are such a masterful pair of translators. What are you trying to work out?
You've been alive for 5 decades, and I've been alive in 5 decades as well. That's
good going,
terrifying.
Isn't it? It's good going.
Except that we're only in our 30s, so
I've
that is pretty good going.
Four.
Well done. What do you want, the medal?
What?
That
I'm
is
just
quite
saying,
good.
There is a size.
And you're so young.
I know, and I've been alive for 4.
Sorry, James. Carry on.
That's all right. I was just reading. This is pretty much unique in Asterix, because I think I touched on this last time. It's pretty much the only one that follows the story immediately, kind of after the last. So in Asterix the Golden Sickle, you'll remember, I'm sure, Getafix dispatched Asterix and Obelix to Lutetia, or Paris, as I call it. To go and get him a replacement Golden Sickle, as he is going to visit the Forest of Carnutes for the annual Druid conference. So the opening scene, we see it's becoming increasingly familiar. As I said, you get to a point where the style has set, so the characters look the way that we're expecting. Not so much Asterix and Obelix, more the peripheral characters. So like Cacophonix the Bard still hasn't quite become the character we know from the later books. Vital Statistics, the chief, doesn't quite look the way he would look in later books. Getafix now, though, seems to be fixed in the way that we expect him to. Although there is a very cute opening scene where Cacophonix is up in his treehouse and he's sweeping out all of the broken notes onto one of the poor villagers below. And it is the first time that Cacophonix has the crap beaten out of him as he attempts to play a farewell song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, no, that's not true, because I think he had the shit kicked out of him in...
They're quite nasty to him, aren't they?
But he's a dreadful bard.
Yeah, but people don't get better by you beating them up.
But they just want him to stop. They don't care if he gets better.
He might go home and cry.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Maybe we should do that to our annoying bards, yes. Like Bono and that woman, Jessie, what's her name, off The Voice.
She seems very cruel to me.
She seems just very cruel and very up herself, considering she's only been around 5 bloody minutes.
Yeah, not yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a long time in the music industry.
You tell her, sister. Anyway, Asterix and Obelix decide they're going to accompany Getafix to the Forest of Carnutes. Meanwhile, so near the Forest of Carnutes, on the Roman Gothic border, a group of evil Goths beat and tie up a pair of Roman legionaries. The Goths are... I still can't read the first one.
They're written in a really funny script.
It's Gothic script. Yeah. Tartaric, atmospheric, prehistoric and esoteric, with their chief choleric. and that's where you take your hat off to the translators, because there's so much wordplay in Asterix.
Yeah.
And it's all lovely and it all makes sense. It's really good. They decide they're going to go to the Forest of Carnutes and they are going to kidnap them, the winner of the Golden Menhir, which is the prize for being the best druid.
I remember from the last book.
Do you?
Mm.
Did I mention that in the
I think you might have
book?
Done, didn't
I don't
you?
Think I did.
Oh, maybe you didn't. Maybe I'm just remembering it from the past.
Mm. On the way... Maybe. I'm sure you've read this.
I think I probably did, yeah.
On the way to the forest, Getafix jumps into his sports car. Jumps in the sports car so he gets there quicker. Bumps into his old friend, Value-Added Tax, the British druid, who creates a potion for a passing Roman cohort, where he makes one of the legionaries eat some herbs, and all he can do, he can't talk afterwards, he can just bray like a donkey.
Does he mix up his potions in a vat?
He doesn't know. Oh. But that would be so funny if he did.
Oh, man.
Oh, it would be seeing that joke through to its bitter conclusion, wouldn't it? So, they arrive at the Forest of Carnutes. The Asterix and Obelix aren't allowed to go in because they're not druids. They're not druids. So they have to stay outside. But Value-Added Tax and Getafix go in and they do their druidy thing. There's a lovely... lovely scene where we see all of the druids. Druid Prefix, for example, just throws powder in the air and he makes it rain. So that's Druid Prefix. Druid Suffix has invented a powdered soup, which they say, well, that's not... He says, you don't need a cauldron to make this powdered soup. They say, that's not very clever. He goes, yes, but I have also invented powdered cauldrons. Which is
so then some of them are quite clever then. Just the best.
Well, no, you'd think. Value-Added Tax creates a potion that allows you to take chips out of boiling oil. But naturally, Getafix wins with his magic potion that makes you super strong. He chooses a very old, feeble druid to test it. I don't know why, but I particularly love it when... Ijiro draws trees. I don't know what it is, but I love...
You love his trees.
I love the panels where people are ripping trees out. They're just so gorgeous. More of that much later when we talk about the Mansions of the Gods. So, obviously, as Getafix won, the Goths decide that he's their man. After some time, Asterix and Obelix realise Getafix isn't coming back, and they find a... abandoned Goth helmet. A mix-up... Obviously, they decide they've got to go and rescue Getafix. But a mix-up with some Roman legionaries leads the local legions to believe that Asterix and Obelix are in fact the Goths they're looking for. So instead of searching for the band of Goths with the druid, the stupid fucking Romans end up looking for Asterix and Obelix instead.
I hate those pricks.
Yeah, I hate them.
What did they ever do for us?
Exactly. Splitters. Asterix and Obelix decide to get around this by searching for two legionaries who wear uniforms in the sizes small and medium.
Mm.
Because obviously Obelix is just big boned, he's not fat.
He is not fat.
And so I think for the first time, but most certainly not for the last, we see Asterix and Obelix in their full legionary garb heading towards Germania or Gothland.
Gothland,
it's near Merseyside. So the Romans go crazy, start beating each other up because they find the two legionaries that Asterix and Obelix have tied up, realise that Asterix and Obelix are disguised as Roman legionaries, so they just start looking for every large and small legionary in the forest and end up beating each other half to death. So they all arrive at Germania, where the Goths are swearing at each other. Interesting symbols in some of the speech bubbles. That's a swastika, isn't it?
It's a broken swastika.
But it's a swastika. But it's definitely a
swastika. It's less like a swastika than the current flag of the party that did okay in the Greek elections.
That's a worry.
Yeah, I know, isn't it? But it is still a swastika.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, I think René Goscinny mentioned, when interviewed much later, that actually he was a little bit uncomfortable later on with some of the stereotyping he did of the German characters. I think this was written... Obviously, those guys had lived through the Second World War. Yeah. It was still very close, and sort of French attitudes towards the Germans was not particularly charitable at the time. But I have to say, I was talking to Paul, a friend of ours, and hello, Paul, if you're listening. And we were talking about... I was certainly thinking about Tintin in comparison. Some of it is racist by modern eyes. Certainly, the depiction of black Africans in Asterix gets uncomfortable at times.
No.
Certainly, it's very stereotypical, big lips and sort of over-exaggerated. But then, everyone in Asterix is lampooned and poked fun at. But it feels a lot more gentle than early Tintin.
Yeah.
It's not pure ignorance. It's kind of knowing fun.
Yeah.
In a way, you know. So, Asterix is gentle and has a sort of... The storytelling has a warmth to it that makes you forgive a lot of these sort of shall we call them oversights.
I'm gonna revisit what I think of what you just said when I see exactly how uncomfortable you are dealing with one of the books. I'm gonna measure how uncomfortable you are when you deal with one of those depictions.
Yeah, we'll wait until the pirates turn up. I don't think the pirates are going to turn up for a while.
Let's see how you feel about
maybe
it.
Maybe the next one. I can't remember if there's any black African characters in the next book I'm going to talk about. We shall see. Much squirming, I'm sure, will follow. As I say, Asterix and Obelix follow the Goths over the border, where the raiding horde have taken Getafix to their great chief Metric, who decides that he's going to try and get the secret of the magic potion out of him. He calls his Weasley interpreter Rhetoric to him to try and convince the ghoulish wizard to give up his secrets. Obviously, Getafix, he can speak in ghoulish, and Getafix is essentially just staying quiet. And when he does speak, he's basically saying, I'm paraphrasing here, fuck off, mate.
Yeah.
Or never, as it's written here. So, is it paraphrasing when you make it longer?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. But, because there's an opportunity with a translating character to come up with some really good wordplay, which they don't normally flinch from in Asterix, but I'd have wondered how they'd translate.
There isn't.
Translation humour.
There isn't a lot.
Mm.
In this
shame.
There is later on, because we find out Geth Fix might know more languages than he's letting on. Asterix and Obelix disguise themselves as Goths and make their way to... I'm not sure if the city they go to is ever revealed to us, actually. And I think at this point it probably doesn't matter.
I'm uncomfortable with the... I'm uncomfortable with the fact that Asterix is wearing a pointy helmet.
Yeah.
But he's still wearing his wings underneath.
Absolutely,
and it's
yeah.
giving his... helmet a really weird look that I don't like very much.
It is quite uncomfortable, isn't it? I think he looks a bit like a Hell's Angel in the outfit
yeah,
he's got
but they
on,
kind
actually.
Of do look like the hairy bikers a little bit.
They do a little bit, only less tedious and irritating.
Yeah. So those gigantic moustaches.
Yeah. So yet again, Asterix and Obelix find themselves accidentally drafted into an army they're not fighting for. While they try and work out where Getafix is. Meanwhile, Rhetoric decides that he needs to get the F out of Dodge. Because he's lied to the chief metric, and he knows that he's going to get his comeuppance. He's caught, and Asterix and Obelix bump into him as he's been marched to jail, so all three of them end up in a cell together. Asterix and Obelix obviously decide to get out of the jail, which they do. Rhetoric spills his guts about what's happened to Getafix, but as they make their way back towards the jail... Rhetoric tries to give away their position to some guards. So, because it's convenient to do so, Asterix and Obelix give themselves up after a massive fight with these Gothic guards, give themselves up to the smallest and weediest of the lot, who takes them to Chief Metric, where they are reunited with Getafix. It's at this point that the very loud people outside walk past the and put me off.
People are so
obnoxious. Tell them, Nick! Open up the window and tell them!
What the hell was that voice?
You want to say to him, my friend James is doing a spotlight up here.
I'm doing a podcast with slightly, possibly homophobic Frank Spencer.
Do you think?
I don't know.
Wasn't
it
a little
lady
bit. Voice?
Oh, was that what that was?
It was a bit Frank Spencer.
Oh, okay. Anyway, Getafix chooses this point. To reveal to Metric that he can indeed speak German. And he tells him that his interpreter's been lying to him. All four of them get thrown into jail, at which point Asterix, Obelix and Getafix hatch a devious plan. They will divide and conquer.
Ah.
They give magic potion to Rhetoric, who becomes chief, and throws Metric... into jail. Then they give Metric some magic potion, who then tries to depose Rhetoric, but at this point Asterix, Obelix and Getafix have been around most of the city giving various people access to the potion, whereby the Asterixian wars begin.
A tangled web indeed.
A tangled web, certainly. And basically in the ensuing chaos that this power struggle causes, Asterix, Obelix and Getafix make their escape. So lovely, lovely page where it would be a nine panel page if it wasn't for this first bit.
Yeah. It's actually nearer to a 12 panel page.
It is, isn't it, actually? Yeah, sorry, because that's nine panels there. I beg your pardon, it would be a 12. I can't do me sums.
With text,
where it just explains exactly what the series of events were with the key players. It's basically just a series of panels with various Goth characters hitting each other over the head with a club.
The suggestion that they're all war—they're like so warmongering they can't even get on with each other.
Absolutely, and that's—I think that's what the embarrassment was in terms of their depiction of the Goths. Was they were a very warmongering race. With that, Asterix, Obelix, and Getafix makes their way back to the village, whereupon they have a delicious banquet under a starry sky.
Ta-da.
Now for a feast.
I hadn't read that book for an awfully long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd kind of forgotten what happened after Getafix was captured. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I said on Tuesday night on Twitter, one of the best things about doing a comic book podcast is once every 3 weeks, I get to read an Asterix book.
Yeah.
It made me so happy in my tummy reading this again. I love it. It's a great book. And it's starting to get into the series has really found its feet, I think, by this point, certainly by the next book. which is Asterix the Gladiator, which we will talk about in, I guess, in about 3 weeks. I think that's the book where it really... Everything kind of looks the way you expect, and the series and the characters have become fully formed. But you certainly feel it in this book too. It's just so... It holds up beautifully. Hasn't aged, because obviously it's already a period piece. The humour isn't topical either. So it's just silly, funny wordplay that delighted me when I was a kid. And coming back to these now as a 37-year-old man, delight me all over again. They are so much fun.
We were talking a little bit about the art before, weren't we? That as beautiful as Tintin is, and as sometimes quite dense as Tintin is, it's amazing the composition in this, the composition of some of the bigger panels, especially the huge like village scenes or whatever. The amount of detail and the amount of stuff that's going on that's crammed into them, how dense they are, but also how clear they are, is amazing. Adazo's amazing.
And how perfectly they draw your eye from the start point to the finish. They as storytelling panels, they're perfect. Such a master of his art. It's just, it's interesting. There's going to be a new creative team taking over, because obviously Albert Adazo did a few on his own, and I have to say that... We'll talk about them when I get to them. They're not as good as the books he did with René Goscinny. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't think a breath of fresh air at this point in this series is necessarily a bad thing, but it will be interesting to see how good a job the artist does of not only aping how the books looked, but how well they were composed.
Yeah. That will be interesting indeed.
Mm. Who knows, there might even be one out by the time I get to the end of this series. Thank you.
That was brilliant. Thank you, James. No, that was awesome.
Thank you for humouring me.
It's not humouring. You're awesome. So what are we up to this week, guys? Anything?
I don't know. A bit of gardening, probably. If it stays nice. Well, Saturdays might be nice, so that'd be the day.
My garden's dying. It's depressing.
It's not dying. It's just resting.
Yeah,
my garden is demonstrating the second law of thermodynamics to me.
Oh my god, that's your entropy. Coolest voice ever.
Thank you.
You're quite cute when you were doing it.
Thank you very much.
I don't think that would have offended anyone, except maybe depressives.
Well, but, I'd only be offending myself and my closest friends.
Possibly going to see the Avengers.
Oh, good, okay.
Possibly in 3D.
Marvel's Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, have you heard of it?
No.
No? No, it's happening. Everyone likes it.
By Disney.
It's going to be big.
It Disney.
Possibly in 3D, because I haven't seen the film in 3D. So, Life Partner Steve said, let's kill two birds with one stone.
I think it's good to know why you don't like it.
Because I have been on rides that are in 3D, that are 3D in 3D. 3D well, things happen.
60.
If you're moving through them and things... I've been on rides that are double D.
And triple X. I think there is an upcoming review of Piranha 3 double D on a website not very far away from us.
I'd be looking forward to reading that.
Yeah, me too.
I loved the first one. Saw it on TV. It was great.
As in... In some theme parks, including Disneyland and Thorpe Park, which is local to us.
Just name all of the theme parks you've been to, Jane.
Kensington, Alton Towers. Do you mean,
when you say 3D, because I don't know how many she's been to, and I was concerned that was going to be quite a long list.
No, it's because I've been to two. One in Disneyland and one in Thorpe Park, but they were different. They were both 3D rides, and you had to put glasses on and watch things, but they were very different.
It's a bit of a cheap way of doing a ride.
I think there's two rides in Disneyland that are 3D. There's the Star Wars one.
I didn't expect this conversation to be so complicated.
No, Star Wars is in 3D. There's just another one where you stand in a room and you have to put the glasses on and everything's all around you. But the one in Thorpe Park...
Oh, that's the IMAX thing at Disneyland.
Oh, I remember going in that one.
Does it count as a ride? Presumably you're sitting in one place and you don't move.
It was more a stand
than a ride. Well,
yeah, exactly. It's an attraction of the park. But
you're an attraction of the park.
Thanks.
Oh, that was weird.
Your face. The one in Thorpe Park, you have to sit down and it's like an interactive thing because you have to put the glass on, but then they squirt water at you and air and things, so you're part of the story.
Doesn't sound like a ride. That sounds fucking irritating.
So I have experienced 3D where I sit down and have to put glasses on and look at something, but not in a film.
Do they squirt do they squirt things from away, or do they save money by just getting a person who works there for each person, and they spit a little bit on you and then they blow in your hair and stuff like that?
And go in your ear.
Smell-o-vision. Each one of them has to do a fart in your direction and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, that sounds nice.
No.
It's a good film, and it's a good enough film to watch as your first 3D film.
And I have almost finished watching Firefly, so I'll be watching Serenity at the weekend as well.
Good, that'll be good. I want to hear what you think of that next week.
Mm-hmm. I ain't fussed.
And Horrible Bosses, which has come through in that film, which I'm looking forward to.
I like that, that was good.
It looks really good.
Is she ever going to fucking stop?
And 9 to 5.
9.5 weeks?
No, what is that film? Everyone keeps talking
you
about
should
it.
Watch it. Ask your mum.
My mum's friend used to have it on video.
Oh.
And I remember we were going to pick a film to watch, and my friend's daughter said, let's watch this, and then she said, no, you can't watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a couple of films we picked up that we weren't allowed to watch.
I bet.
Oh dear, scarred childhood men.
Well, no, if you'd watched them, maybe. Or if you'd watched them, you could have gone down a completely different route sitting there watching it.
I don't know what it is. Tell me after the pod,
right. Framework.
I've stopped talking about films that I'm going to watch this weekend.
I can't remember what I'm doing.
You're talking about your garden, but I think that's James.
Huh?
You talked about your garden, but I think that's...
We all look the same, don't we?
I might be doing some gardening.
Actually, I'm not convinced that you two are two separate people sometimes.
That's weird.
I know.
I don't know what happens in James' world.
You channel each other.
I think taking all that acid probably really straightened me out, if that's the way people who haven't taken acid's brains work. We're like sitting, you have to crane your head to look at the two of us.
I can see you.
Three people in the room, the only one who hasn't really ever taken drugs in their life is the most fucked up of the three.
I don't know. I think this has been a long week, and I think I'll do some gardening, maybe masturbate, I don't know. Amy might be away this weekend.
Oh, she'll get a lot of wanking time.
So I'll have a really depressing weekend.
Aww.
I'm getting very few wank. I had a wank window on Sunday.
God.
And I chose the round window,
like a boob window,
the square window, the triangle window, and the wank window.
No, it's the window of wank opportunity.
Who's looking at us through the wank window?
Wank opportunity. But I chose instead to go and do my garden. I'm very old.
That's not code, is it?
This and
no. I went and did stuff in the garden that wasn't wanking.
Why are you doing your sign language if you have two penises and you're wanking?
That was my mowing machine.
All right, okay. This conversation is specially for Lee Gallagher.
Then I did this.
Is that you?
That's me scattering my seed.
Okay.
Which I did in the garden. I scattered seed in the garden.
It's not real proper gardening if all you're doing is putting some grass seed down.
Fuck you! I mixed it with some good quality topsoil. I fucking made a proper top dress and everything.
This will be therapy for Lee after having such a traumatic event on the train.
Were they hairy balls, Lee? Were they big hairy balls, or did it look like he took care of himself and either shaved or waxed his nuts?
Is that the question for this week? That's
the question for this week, specifically the Lee Gallagher.
I'd like to know the answer to that, but that isn't our question for this week.
No, but that's
I don't know what our
to
question
Lee.
Is for this week. We'll think of something.
We'll think of something. Okay.
I tried to come up with one, but it was convoluted and shit.
Well, that doesn't sound like you.
We need to go now because I'm starting to hallucinate.
My face is starting to ache from laughing at James so much.
I need a wee.
We're going now, listener.
Thank you for listening.
You're awesome.
Thank you.
Don't know what that was. Bye-bye. maybe I've just got some disease. I had a bit of an erection already, so...
I hate that people who love that sort of thing don't understand why other people that don't. Why they don't. I fucking hate it. It's like, why can't you... why don't you enjoy yourself? Because I'm finding it crushingly embarrassing, you fucking prick!
I thought it was cool. Oh, yeah, it is cool. What?
Because he says something funny about his mum and his little brother. And,
I don't know what you're going on about.
Russell Howard, I hate him. No. Oh, I just don't like him. Ah.
Why do you take it out on me? It's not like I'm part of the problem.
Because I love you so much, and I'm hoping that we get angry with each other and have really vicious makeup sex.
Is that what you think?
No.
Is that how you think it works? Do I strike you as someone who...
You can strike me.
Who does anything except just get more and more angry.
Yeah, no, it's like I don't know you, innit?
Jane, can you say something, please?
Hello.
Okay. Can we not talk about your face?
What? What's wrong?
I don't think it was name mentioned.
Can we talk about our friend who mustn't be named? We'll beep out a bit where I mention his name. We've got a friend.
Do you want to start from the beginning?
Yeah, I can do.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
Okay. You'll edit that out. It's fine. Do it.